What is going on, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to yet another episode of Ant and Big Red vs. the World. As always, I'm Big Red.
And as always, I'm still Average Ant.
And we got a great show for you today. We, once again, are kind of in a little mixed spot with content, but want to give you guys a couple cool segments. One that has a lot to do with Marsh Madness, and then another one that has to do with some good goodbyes. Ant, you want to get a little deeper into what we're going into today?
Yeah, so unfortunately, we couldn't really tackle the whole March Madness thing just simply based on the fact of how fast it goes down. So our March Madness kind of thing is just taking a look at a few players entering the draft, really, and what we like, don't like about them, and what we think somewhat their careers slash futures will look like. And then on the other side, well, we got dudes that are starting their careers. We got guys that are ending their careers with a few notable retirement announcements across a wide range of sports, from the NFL to UFC to basketball. And then, of course, we got an honorable mention and the Big Red Bus. So definitely kind of all over the place, but that's what keeps it fresh. So that's what we got going on for you guys today.
Yeah, and so with that in mind, we're going to kick it off with the semi kind of March Madness involved college basketball piece here, with a couple of names that I'm sure you've heard a lot about, Ja Morant and Zion Williamson. I guess, well, Zion, you probably heard enough about. We've talked on him here a couple times. Zion's a beast. We're going to dive into our opinions on him a little bit more. But I think starting off, Ant, I'll let you take it away with Ja Morant.
Yeah, so I guess out of the three guys that we're really going to talk about today, which is Ja, RJ Barrett, and Zion, Ja is probably the biggest wild card, if you want to say, just because of how fast he really came onto the scene. I mean, last year he was really pretty much an unknown, wasn't even on any draft boards or anything, wasn't highly recruited out of high school, but I guess that's all attributed to how well he's grown his game and how fast he's grown his game and his work ethic, pretty much. So I guess first things first, what I like most about Ja is that he has a winner's mentality. He has that dog in him that he wants to win. And that's something I personally feel like all three of these guys have, which is kind of something that we haven't really seen out of three top three picks. I mean, or potential picks. It seems like one of them or two of them like are kind of just there because they're good at basketball and don't really care about winning. But I mean, we saw it with Ja. He was pretty much in tears after losing, after getting eliminated from the March Madness tournament. So I guess separating it from what he does on the court to the mentality he has and the stuff that you can't really measure, that's probably what I love most about Ja, his work ethic and his just overall Mamba mentality, if you want to call it winner's mentality and all that. So I guess before I get into what I like about him on the court and the numbers he could put up, what are your kind of initial positives about Ja?
Well, I mean, like you said it yourself, he kind of burst onto the scene kind of semi out of nowhere. He's a sophomore at Murray State, semi tucked away. I was pretty blown away to see just the numbers in general. I mean, first glance, numbers blow you away, and then you watch the kid play, and it's crazy, the motor that he plays with, high energy all the time. I brought Murray State through a couple rounds, ultimately got smacked by Florida State, but he still played well in both those games, and he played hard and tried carrying his team. And so, I mean, that's, like you said, Mamba mentality. I don't know. I don't know if I can say a guy that's as good a passer as he is, and as if he's full Mamba mentality. But he definitely has the motor and the drive to put the team on his back and score when he needs to, pull up from deep if he needs to. So I really like Ja Morant. I'm excited to see him in the NBA. I think he's got a super unique skill set, and like you said, the mentality piece is huge as you enter the NBA, leaving the college ranks.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, touching on his kind of unique play style, it's kind of hard. Like, you always try to compare college athletes coming in to what they might be in the pros. You always see it. You hate to see it sometimes with Andrew Wiggins getting compared to, he's being called like the Canadian Michael Jordan. So that's kind of tough on that. But Ja is one of like the dudes who you can't really come up with a good player comp because of how unique his play style really is. I mean, at the top of the list where you want to compare him to is kind of like a Russell Westbrook because of his athleticism and how he's able to score top level and facilitate and pass at a high level. But he hones his athleticism in a way where he's crafty. And that's something that you don't really see is a dude that's a super freak athlete, but he's also crafty. It's kind of like a hybrid between Kyrie and Russ in a way. And that's just something you don't ever see when a dude has jump out of the gym athleticism. He could jump over a guy and dunk on him, but he also can slice it up, dribble, hit some Euro steps and stuff like that, and just be crafty and a wizard with the ball.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Russell Westbrook comparison. I mean, I think, honestly, I think even a Russell Westbrook comparison doesn't necessarily do what Jaw's accomplishing justice. I mean, Russell Westbrook, at this young of an age, you talk about that kind of athleticism and polish. It's impressive for sure, but it's even more impressive to see him doing it this young. I mean, Russell Westbrook averaged 4.3 assists per game at UCLA in college. Ja Morant averaged 10 assists and 24.6 points this year. I mean, the incredible amount of just poise and skill he's already showing at the college level. Some people will argue that Murray State didn't necessarily have some of the competition, but then he goes out and puts on a triple-double against Marquette and even puts up 28 points with five threes against Florida State, even though they lost. Ja Morant has vision in the youth like Trae Young does, and he has Russell Westbrook athleticism. The only concern I have really at all is, I mean, he's 6'3", 175. That's a little, oh, that's under a little undersized at the NBA. I mean, the height's there. You mean Chris Paul's 6 foot barely.
But he has to wear four pairs of socks to hit 6 foot.
and I mean, and he's one of the most dominant point guards in the NBA. So I mean. Or was. Ja Morant's profile, the only thing that really spooks me at all is that kind of skinnier frame, but I see no reason why that's not going to fill out and his athleticism's going to just continue to jump off the map at you.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of have two somewhat concerns when it comes to Ja, and neither of them are really a concern on his basketball game, specifically. One, of course, as you mentioned, is his body frame being 175, 6'3", is definitely undersized, but I mean, we've seen it with KD, who came in not even being able to bench 185, I think is what they have at the combine, to being one of the best scorers to ever live. So. Definitely he will be able to bulk up. I mean, he doesn't have to get super ripped or anything, but I definitely believe he'll be able to put on at least 10 pounds or so of muscle. So I'm not necessarily worried about that. The one thing that I am worried about to an extent is the fact that he plays at Murray State and how hard it is to kind of evaluate the smaller school guards and stuff like that. Like, it's kind of hard to decipher the Damian Lillards and Steph Currys from like the Chris Dunns and Cameron Paynes and all that. And I mean, if you even if you want to throw Jimmer for dead on that, but it was kind of clear that Jimmer wasn't going to work out in the NBA. But that's really my only concern. And I mean, it gets washed away pretty quick when it comes to his work ethic and just how hard he's willing to work, going from an unrecruited really high school player to a potential first round, or not first round, first pick. If it wasn't for the freak that Zion is, he'd probably be going number one. So, I mean, not a ton of negatives on Ja, really. I mean, but a ton of positives on him.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned the smaller competition being a bigger kind of issue. But I mean, his work ethic absolutely trumps it. And I was watching, it was Stephen A. Talking about Ja Morant, and he was saying, you see these guys, like you see these guys play. You saw Dame play, you saw Allen Iverson play, and you looked at those guys and you were like, that's a top pick. That's a guy. That's a dude that goes out there and puts everything on for his team and is going to be a star one day. And Stephen A said that he felt that same way about Ja Morant. And so, I mean, that's just one of those things that it's like the eye test. You go out and see a guy play, even if it is against competition deemed lesser, you go out and see a guy play, and it's that intangible that hopefully Ja Morant does, in fact, have and is going to take and star at the next NBA level. I honestly, I see him going number two.
Yeah, I mean, it probably depends on what team ends up with the number two pick, but I'm not saying he deserves to, or I'm not saying he doesn't deserve to go number two because he definitely does. RJ also deserves to go number two, so I mean, it's kind of interchangeable. I'm not gonna be mad either way, whichever one goes number two, because I feel like the three guys that we're talking about today are kind of not a, necessarily guaranteed to be a superstar, but almost a guaranteed to not bust, barring injuries, of course. But I feel like all three guys that we're going to talk about are safe, and that includes Ja Morant. And if the Kings somehow end up with the number three pick or number two pick, and Ja's there, I'm all on board taking him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh
I
wait,
hope you
never mind. I
feel
think
well next
the
to
Kings traded their pick, I think, actually. So scratch
that. Hey, I still think he'd fit nice next to
that.
De'Aaron Fox and the boys. But I guess moving on from one potential number two pick, we'll go over to another potential number two pick. And you can kind of get started with RJ Barrett if you'd like.
Yep, RJ Barrett, kind of a lot of what we said applies to Ja Morant, minus the facilitator and passing, and minus probably the freak athleticism, although RJ Barrett is a really, really good athlete. I just feel like Ja just hones his in a different way than RJ does. But the only thing that really, I guess there's kind of two things that concern me again about RJ is his shot selection, which is something that everybody kind of gets on him for. He takes a lot of weird shots, or he has taken a lot of weird shots late in games when the game was on the line and when he kind of needs to pick up the offense, especially when Zion was out. He's taken a lot of deep twos, which is weird. I mean, you never want to get into the situation where you're taking a lot of deep twos unless you're DeMar DeRozan. But RJ is probably the three, or the one of the three that I kind of feel the weirdest about. I mean, although I feel like he might be the safer pick, if you want to say, when it comes between him and Ja, just because of how quick Ja kind of just came on the scene and all that. But RJ, like Ja and like Zion, who we'll talk about later, has that same hunger. He has the winner's mentality. He wants to win, which is obvious. It's something you can't really teach. You can't instill the will to compete into a player. And when a guy like RJ Barrett, you hear him talk, you hear all of his post-game interviews, and that's probably that's the biggest positive for me when you watch a guy who's 19, 18 years old talk the way he does about winning and all that. It's just something you love to see. So like Ja, a huge part of what I like about RJ is separate from what he can do physically, it's his mentality and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, RJ Barrett, I think we kind of established all three of these guys are worthy of a number one pick or close to a number one pick in another draft. The one thing I kind of want to touch on to your kind of introduction to RJ is your comparison to possibly like a safer pick than Ja Morant. I agree with that to an extent. I think that, A, because Ja Morant kind of came out of nowhere. But his game's undeniable to me. So I mean, it's
Yeah,
tough
for
to say
sure.
that he's any less safe than RJ Barrett. But RJ,
Yeah, well, when I say safer pick, I mean it's
I know
like
what you mean.
I don't know how to explain it, 'cause I'm taking either one.
Exactly,
I'm taking
exactly.
either
But in
one.
the sense of like bare bones, like safety, I get where you're coming from. RJ
Yeah.
Barrett, unlike Ja Morant, has a excellent like basketball frame at like the 6'7", 210 mark. He's
Yeah.
prime, and he's a lifetime 38% 3-point shooter. He's kind of a he's that scoring ability that can immediately step in, kind of like a Devin Booker on the Suns, where Devin Booker is a high pick, and his game just was kind of to slide in and get buckets. RJ Barrett is probably bare minimum going to be able to do that, even if it's not at the same kind of efficiency as he is in college, which it won't be just because it's the NBA, but even then, he still has defensive potential, and that's something where if Ja Morant doesn't have that explosive athleticism or something like that, so say Ja Morant does get injured, then there's fear if that athleticism jumps back. So I mean, I guess that's like the only kind of scenario, bare bones, that I can think of where you'd be
Yeah.
worried about one or the other. But either way, that excellent frame for defense and shooting and slashing scoring ability in general set him up to be a prime candidate to just slot in and get buckets for any team that drafts him, and it's either going to be in the two or three spot. I think we kind of decided it's definitely going to depend on who gets it. I mean, if the Suns are the two spot, they're not going to take a A guy that,
Yeah, a
yeah,
Devin Booker
exactly. A guy begrudge
2.0.
is compared to Devin Booker, so
But can play defense,
yeah,
maybe.
we'll exert a little more effort. But yeah, to me, RJ Barrett is legit. It's kind of funny how Cam Reddish kind of fell off out of the top
Yeah.
five talk when you're going on these monsters on Duke. But I mean, either way, Duke is still loaded with Zion and RJ Barrett, and RJ is nice. I think he's gonna go number three, but just as easily could go number two.
Yeah, for sure. One thing that I'll say though that I'd like to see RJ Barrett kind of build on is his facilitating ability. When Zion was out, and sometimes when Zion's on the court, he shows flashes of being able to be like a Ja Morant kind of level facilitator, but it's just he kind of just has tunnel vision at times where he doesn't think about passing at all. And you could tell that he's once he touches the ball, he's just gonna try to score, and that's where a lot of the bad shot selections and deep two pointers come in. So I mean, he's a really good passer, and I hope he could just kind of build on what he's able to do and expand his game to be able to become a legitimate facilitator for not just Duke, but whatever team he ends up playing for in the
No,
NBA.
I actually absolutely agree with that. And I mean, you talk about Ja Morant's passing ability and Cam Reddish, or no, sorry, RJ Barrett showing flashes. Part of that maybe is too that RJ Barrett's a freshman and Ja Morant's a sophomore. It's a little more time to
Yeah.
develop, and I mean, it's kind of unthinkable with a one and done freshman here at Duke, but another year at Duke, maybe RJ Barrett comes out leading the offense even more. With a Zion Williamson gone and averages 25 and 10, like it's not unthinkable. With the flashes that he's shown, it's just going to take a little more polish and experience, I think.
Yeah. So I guess say he ends up with the Cavs and is paired up with Colin Sexton, I definitely feel like he'll be more put into a facilitator role where he has to facilitate more rather than lean on his scoring as much because Colin Sexton isn't the greatest facilitator. So I think obviously you don't want anybody to go to Cleveland really unless they're LeBron James in the draft, but I guess that'd be good for him and his facilitating anyway. Not good anywhere else though.
Yeah, I think we decided we just would rather no one go to Cleveland.
Yeah,
Sorry,
trade
you
their
got
pick
your
or something.
championship, but that's about it. Bouncing on from there, we'll move on to the kind of number one pick for ever since he got to college, Zion Williamson, absolute beast, 6'7", 285, he's listed at for Duke this year. Just a monstrous human being with athleticism that you just can't imagine at that size, with LeBron-like athleticism at that size. And I say LeBron-like athleticism because I want to make it clear I do not want to compare Zion to LeBron at all. I think it's
Yeah.
unfair to Zion, ridiculous. Please just let Zion be Zion.
Yeah. I mean, like, I guess I get where the comparison came from, but I mean, if you actually like watch them, their games are really not similar at all, besides the fact that they can jump really high, run really fast, and slam it down and all that. But other than that, like their games are kind of not the same.
No, exactly. And while I do think that Zion has a lot of the abilities that LeBron does or has the potential to have them, Zion's more of a big man right now, and
Yeah.
LeBron walked in as like the as a point god basically, like a
Yeah, he walked in as a Magic
exactly.
Johnson.
And that's not what Zion's gonna walk in as. That's probably the potential of a Zion, but that's not where it is right now. The jump shot's not as pristine as it needs to be. It just needs work, needs more shooting, needs more shots, needs more experience. So yeah, that's why we're not comparing him to LeBron. It's gonna be all about Zion from here on. Dude's an absolute freak. I mean, your take's right off first reaction, Ant.
I guess my first take is really there's not really anything to talk about, honestly. It's kind of like being a dead horse at this point. Like you said, ever since he got to college, ever since he played his first game, he's been the number one pick. Really, the only, I guess, negative, if you want to say, about him is his free throw shooting, which is at around 65%. I mean, although you'd like to see his 3-point shooting a little higher, at least his 3-point shot is respectable. to some extent, which opens up the floor a little more. And like you said, the facilitating too. He's a decent facilitator. He makes some passes that are crazy, and that hint to future of being a facilitator. But I mean, really the only weakness, like I said, is his free throw shooting at 65%. But other than that, crazy score in the post, driving, running, jumping, dunking, all that. Crazy defender. As safe as a number one pick as you can get,
Yeah,
honestly.
I mean, you said it. The athleticism speaks for itself, but I don't want to undercut it. He shows a lot of polish, just in
Yeah.
terms of ball handling for a guy his size. And I mean, that's, I guess, the closest LeBron comparison I would get, but it's still not there. And I do. He shows some finesse, which is pretty surprising for a dude his size and his athleticism. So I mean, it's impressive. Last thing I would guess I will shout out about him is, I mean, throughout the tournament he's been balling out. 23 versus Virginia Tech, 32 versus UCF, and 25 between or versus North Dakota. And so he's just balling out. I mean, he's coming back from that knee injury, further proving everybody right, I guess. He's gonna go number one overall, and it's probably gonna be the Knicks. And I guess we'll find out if the Knicks is actually gonna be the Pelicans in the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll have to watch out for it. Something crazy though about Zion's stats is that his field goal percentage is higher than his free throw percentage, which is it's cool. I mean, he's up near 70%. It's like 68%, I believe, is what his field goal percentage is, as opposed to his 65% free throw shooting. So, like I said, all he got to do is get in the gym, work on some free throws.
Absolutely. Either way, Zion probably gonna be a star. Good for him going number one overall. And with that, we'll move on from the young bucks getting more and more ready for the draft and on to the career guys that are calling it quits. And I'll let you take it away with your first member in the retirement segment.
Yeah, just a side note real quick. I wish I could say these guys were old. None of them are really old. I guess Chris Bosh is probably the oldest, but they're all about mid-30s or younger, which a couple of them around 30, actually, which is kind of unfortunate. I guess you'd like to see careers be extended, but I mean, they're calling it quits. Can't hate on them. All of them are res have either respectable careers or all-time great careers. So without further ado, we'll get into the first one, which is Rob Gronkowski. Actually, we'll go with Rob Gronkowski first. So, just some quick career stats. He played 9 years, which is what I was kind of alluding to. He's only 29 years old, I believe,
Yeah, he's
or maybe
29.
30. Yeah, 29. So calling it quits at 29, which is understandable, giving all of his injuries and stuff. But just some quick stats. He has 521 career receptions, 7,861 yards, and 79 touchdowns to his name. So just kind of putting his career as a tight end in perspective, that's really good, some really good numbers right there.
Yeah, and I mean, while I'm not the biggest Gronk fan in the world, just mainly because he's a Patriot, gotta respect the party animal, his beast. You mentioned the 79 touchdowns. That's first in franchise history for the Patriots, and he's second in receiving yardage with around 7,000 in franchise history. So he definitely had a major impact in the Patriots, kind of the Patriot era, basically, with Bill Belichick and Brady, and was obviously Brady's favorite target anytime he was in. So with that in mind and Gronk's spirit in mind, favorite moment for him would be the Week 8, 2016, Gronk's 69th career reception touchdown, which actually extended him two away from the previous record holder for franchise touchdowns in Patriot history.
Yeah, definitely crazy moment. I mean, if you know anything about Gronk and his personality, you know that that 69 touchdown is just legendary. I mean, if he wanted to, I know he's probably at least considering it, retiring right there, so, just so he could retire with 69 career touchdowns.
Absolutely. But moving on from Rob Gronkowski, I guess we will stay in the NFL for one more here. Honestly, I'm gonna let you take it away with Jordy Nelson here, and just because he did retire a Raider.
Yeah, Jordy Nelson, all-time Raider great. probably the greatest Raiders wide receiver ever to put on the silver and black. Just kidding, obviously. Jordy Nelson, another he's a good receiver of his time. Probably one of the most, not one of the most, but one of the more kind of under the radar receivers of his era. I mean, obviously he's paired with Aaron Rodgers for it, so he's getting some good balls thrown to him. But career numbers: 613 receptions, 850 or 8,587 yards, and 72 touchdowns. I guess my only really memory of him was him torching the Steelers in the Super Bowl, going off for 9 receptions and 140 yards in the win. Honorable mention memory, of course, is his time with the Raiders, and I guess his nickname is White Lightning. I guess I never knew that.
No, I Jordy is White Lightning is a fitting name. Being as you look at Jordy Nelson, you didn't expect him to be one of the best receivers in the league during his prime. But I mean, he was. He was fast. He was tough to tackle. He's a great route runner, and obviously one of Aaron Rodgers' favorite targets. My favorite moment for him is the same pretty much. And it was his touchdown to open things scoring against the Steelers. 38-yard TD from Rodgers. I actually remember I was playing Call of Duty Zombies on Ascension with a couple of my buddies, and I'm watching the game on my like from the side, and I just see Jordy Nelson catch the touchdown. I'm like, who is that guy? And I ended up I'm watching the rest of the game, and just Jordy Nelson just pops off for 9 catches and 140, like you mentioned. And I mean, to me, that was kind of his coming out party. And Aaron Rodgers is this GOAT quarterback, and where's his like kind of GOAT receiver? And while Jordy Nelson is not necessarily one of the greatest receivers of all time, but he was to Aaron Rodgers, and he was kind of Aaron Rodgers' go-to guy for a super long time. And being the go-to guy of arguably the greatest quarterback of all time is pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, hands down, Jordy Nelson, great career. Probably, unfortunately, will be one of the forgotten careers amongst wide receivers, which is kind of sad to think about. But I guess we'll end it on a positive note, Jordy Nelson. I'm glad you retired a Raider.
Absolutely. Guess from Jordy Nelson, we will exit the NFL realm and hop on over to something else slightly more violent. Conor McGregor retired. We don't know if it'll stick. Quite honestly, with boxers, fighters, retirements sometimes seem to come and go with challengers. So we'll see if McGregor stays down. You mentioned kind of the younger age. He is 30, but he is in a very brutal profession. And speaking of that brutal profession, he bounced over from his original one to the realm of boxing to take on Floyd Mayweather. That's just kind of my memorable moment of his career in general. I mean, there's a bunch of small moments to pick from, but like actual match-wise, I was just really impressed with the way he came in and kind of semi-held his own with Floyd Mayweather. I mean, everybody knew Floyd was going to win, but I think Conor put up a lot better fight than everybody expected.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely held in there longer and better than what I was expecting. But in terms of if he's going to stay retired, I think he'll stay retired from the UFC in the sense where he's not going to come back full time, but I can definitely see him coming back for a fight or two down the road. But he was dominant in the UFC while he was there. I mean, it kind of seems like a blink of an eye. I mean, if you think about it, it kind of seems like he burst onto the scene, hit the pinnacle, then went and fought Floyd Mayweather, and then now he's retiring. Kind of seems like it happened super fast. But I guess what I always loved about Conor McGregor is how cocky and like how much he believed in himself, and then but when he did end up losing, how he like took it like a man, was humbled from it, and admitted that whoever he lost to got the better of him and stuff. So I mean, that's something that's like honorable, you know what I mean? Just to come out co like usually when someone's cocky, they come out when they lose, they're kind of like sore loserish about it. But Connor was never that, which is something crazy in the realm of like UFC, where you're fighting somebody and trying not to get knocked out by the other dude. But I guess my memory is outside of the ring or outside of the octagon, and it is the infamous water bottle fight, if you had to call it that, where he just started launching water balloons, water bottles. I don't know, it's just su something super funny. I mean, su such a Conor McGregor move to do that. So Definitely kind of funny and entertaining right there. And I guess a bonus fact is his middle name is Anthony, which is something I didn't know. So shout out to Conor McGregor. We got something in common right there. I mean, it's probably where it ends is our, in our commonalities. But yeah, shout out to the ants keeping it
Yeah,
strong.
shout out Conor Anthony McGregor retiring. Had a great career. We love to watch it, and with that kind of his fun spirit in mind, we'll move on to the NBA retirement. Not necessarily new news, but the retirement ceremony of his jersey in Miami happened recently, and it's definitely stirred it up. So, got to shout out Chris Bosh. Chris Bosh kind of has an interesting career. It's not necessarily like you think of Chris Bosh as a goat of the decade, but Chris Bosh had a very good career and won championships with the Heat. And he had a lot of memorable moments too. He's kind of marked as a really fun guy. I wasn't super into basketball at the time, but I do remember hearing and seeing about Chris Bosh's All-Star campaigning in Toronto. Specifically, his cowboy commercial, where he essentially asks, well, not even essentially, where he literally asks everyone to get their ballots out and vote for Chris Bosh, the Toronto Raptors, into the All-Star game. And so if you haven't seen it, go look it up. Just look up Chris Bosh All-Star Game Campaign Toronto Raptors, and you will see Chris Bosh doing one of the funniest things I've seen an NBA player do. And Chris Bosh was a great guy on and off the court. It's really unfortunate that the kind of blood clotting and illnesses ended up shortening his career, but definitely an awesome character in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, very unfortunate how his career ended. I mean, you never want to see that from a guy that, at the time of his blood clot and stuff, was still a really good player. So you hate to see it kind of go down that route where there's nothing he could really do to help it. Like, it wasn't a decline of play that forced him out. It wasn't, he's 40, so he's too old. It was just out of his hands. But the mark he left on the NBA is definitely there. Like, you're talking about how great of a guy he is. When you think about the Big Three, Miami Heat, everybody hated those teams, but no, you never heard anybody say anything negative about Chris Bosh, and they hated, if they hated Chris Bosh or not. I mean, it was always really they hated LeBron pretty much, and to some extent D Wade, but D Wade is a lot like Chris Bosh to where the point, to the point where like nobody can really say anything bad about them,
Well, I mean,
really.
D-Wade had already done it for Miami, and D-Wade got the fucking he got the freaking cop out where he was already in Miami and LeBron and Bosh joined him.
So I mean, Chris, yeah, Chris Bosh was never like a villain. I mean, he was always the dude in the post-game interviews on the court, always in the background making all the funny faces and whatnot, crashing the interviews and stuff. So I mean, that was that all that stuff was really funny. I mean, but to get into like his numbers and stuff, his career averages or his Heat averages were 18-7, which is not slouchy at all. He kind of revolutionized the stretch big and the pick and pop and all that for a big man. And then obviously his Toronto days where he averaged 20.2 and 8 point, or and 9.4. No slouch at all. I mean, he was a dude. So I guess to get into my memory of Chris Bosh, it was a toss-up between the rebound leading up to the Ray Allen three. Everybody knows what that is. If you don't know what that is, you need to go look it up. And the game where LeBron and D Wade were sitting out because it was the lockout shortened season, so superstars were sitting out and all that. So Chris Bosh got the was at the helm for the Heat, and he put up 33 and 14 and 5 on 14 and 27 shooting, 4-4 from the line, and he hit the dagger to seal the game for them. So I mean, that was really cool to kind of see Chris Bosh still be Chris Bosh, and it was a reminder that he still is this dude that can carry a team.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think even when the dreaded Miami Heat were the most hated team in basketball, nobody really hates Chris Bosh, and I hope that's just how he'll be remembered. I mean, he got that jersey retirement in Miami, which I thought was awesome, and I can't really tribute him any better than that. So, you got any more retirements? And I think we might be retiring the segment.
Yeah, I guess it's time to hang up this segment's jersey in the Raptors. In
We're putting up the
the
spikes. Move on. I
Raptors.
guess one last thing is I just kind of have a big red baller. It's just I guess it's the AAF coming into the spotlight again, but this time because Marshall Mathers himself, Eminem, wrote this tweet. Dear at the AAF, please entertain this thought regarding the AAF Iron, blah, 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 other team game. Allowing the players to actually fight would be key to league success like hockey. I would watch every game, even though there is no Detroit team yet. Hint, don't blow it. Sincerely, Marshall. All caps. Clearly, Eminem likes the idea of the AAF, and he wants a team in Detroit, and he wants it to be, you know, a little more gangster, you know, a little more rough and tough.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure Eminem could probably afford to buy a team from the AAF.
Wow, I'd like that. I'd like to see that. That would be pretty funny.
Yeah, that'd be dope. But I mean, unfortunately, we're probably never going to see the fights that Eminem's trying to get going in the AAF just because of the NFL and how the NFL is trying to kind of reduce violence. So, I mean, it's probably impossible that another startup league's going to be featured around violence and all that. Although it would be fun to watch. I mean, hockey fights are always fun to watch. I don't necessarily enjoy hockey all that much, but every time I go to a Tri-City Americans game, I'm always hoping some sort of fight breaks out, and a lot of the time it does, and it gets the crowd going, gets us into it, and then I'm kind of like emotionally connected to the game and stay there and hope we win and stuff, especially if the dude that started the fight was on our team and he ends up taking the L, then you know you got to get the team back and get the game dub.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you are probably right, but I mean, I do think it would be kind of interesting to see some type of regulated fighting like in hockey.
I'd be open to a penalty box in the AAF, even the NFL.
That'd be
super dope,
but the safety concern is probably gonna outweigh it all
different
in the end.
Yeah, different times we live in. This is something I just thought about, was like the cream punch where he pretty much just decked the dude. I forget who the guy was, but Cream gets like elbowed in the stomach, and obviously he didn't really like that, so he just punches the dude straight in the face. Didn't have an opportunity to block it or anything, so that's, we don't see that at all in any sports anymore, obviously. With the Malice in the Palace, that kind of ruined the whole fights in the games for us.
It did, but it's still a legendary story to look back at. And I just, all the, I mean, yeah, you think about it today, I mean, fighting in really any sports, with the exception of the initial instigators, maybe getting one semi-unblocked attempt in, it's pretty much broken up pretty quickly. I mean, you could argue the baseball brawls can get big if there's a lot of tension,
yeah.
But I mean, that's really all that's left, and those are far and few between.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I guess hockey's our only hope / last hope for violence in our sports, or fights in our sports anyway. Like you said, baseball, but the brawls usually don't end up turning into like fist fights and all that. Like they usually, like you said, the instigators and stuff always get separated from the pack and who they're trying to run a fade on or stuff like that. So
yeah, absolutely. You got any honorable mentions there, Ant?
Yeah, so I guess from real fighting, I guess I'll get into fake fighting, which is the WWE. First ever women's main event at WrestleMania is at this WrestleMania. Features Ronda Rousey, Becky Lynch, and Charlotte Flair. So definitely some history right there. I mean, it's probably been like 4-5 years maybe since the Women's Revolution kind of kicked off. So, I mean, it's kind of crazy how fast the WWE has moved and kind of changed the Divas division, where it was kind of just like, oh yeah, here's some girls to look at and all that, to a respectable kind of division where they're actually technical wrestlers and it's fun to watch and all that. So shout out to WWE. And I guess something that I missed, actually, was my favorite moment of Gronk, where he jumps the barricade at WrestleMania to help Mojo Rawley win the Andre the Giant Battle Royale. Jinder Mahal takes his beer, takes a sip of it, dumps it on Gronk. Obviously, the party animal didn't take too kindly to that. Jumps the barrier and goes sicko mode. The rest is history.
Yeah, definitely a goat Gronk moment. I personally didn't pick it myself because I knew Average Jack would like to. But that wraps it up for me. It's Big Red signing off.
This is Avajant signing off. Stay tuned. Thanks for listening and all that. So we'll catch you guys next episode.